This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Boylston and Bolton, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from Berlin, Bolton, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, Stirling, and West Boylston. Today, we will be reading from the July 17th edition of The Item. This is Ellen. Grant will update Stirling's emergency communications infrastructure. Stirling. The town's emergency department are benefiting from a large state grant for public safety. The Stirling Police and Fire Departments, in partnership with the Neshoba Valley Regional District Dispatch, announced the award of $3.6 million public safety grant from the Massachusetts State 911 Department to modernize critical emergency communications equipment and infrastructure and improve the security of the Stirling Police and Fire Station buildings. The grant will support the replacement of aging and increasingly obsolete mobile and portable radios, as well as the radio repeater equipment that forms the backbone of emergency communications for Stirling's first responders. In addition, the grant will fund video security and building access enhancements at both the Stirling Police and Fire Stations, and provide modern means of alerting and transmitting call information to responders working at emergency scenes. Reliable communications are among the most essential tools available to police officers, firefighters, and emergency medical personnel, according to a press release from the police and fire chiefs. Much of the current radio equipment used by the fire and police departments has reached or exceeded its intended service life, making replacement necessary to maintain dependable communications during emergency incidents and day-to-day operations. This project will equip Stirling's first responders with modern, fully interoperable communications equipment that improves coverage, enhances reliability, and strengthens coordination between agencies during emergencies. The upgraded radio system will also better position Stirling and its regional partners to respond effectively to large-scale incidents, mutual aid responses, and natural disasters. This grant represents a major investment in public safety and the most significant one-time improvement the town has ever been able to make in their technology that serves our first responders, Stirling Fire Chief Thomas Kokernak said. This technology is essential for us to provide the level of service our residents have come to expect from us. We are grateful for this funding and for the partnership we have with the Stirling Police Department and Neshoba Valley Regional Dispatch District in bringing this project to fruition. Stirling's Fire Chief Sean Gaudette added, "Public safety depends on reliable communications and secure facilities. This funding allows us to replace aging equipment before failures occur while strengthening the security of our stations. This improvement will have a significant impact on our day-to-day operations." Officials from Neshoba Valley Regional Dispatch District said the project reflects the value of regional collaboration in strengthening emergency communications across the area. Work on the project is expected to begin in the coming months, with planning, procurement, and installation occurring in phases to ensure uninterrupted emergency services throughout the implementation process. In the press release, the Stirling Police Department, Stirling Fire Department, and Neshoba Valley Regional Dispatch District thanked everyone involved in securing this important funding, saying this investment will provide lasting benefits for the community by improving emergency response capabilities, enhancing responder safety, and ensuring that Stirling's first responders remain equipped to meet the public safety challenges of a modern environment. School changes set up strong teams for future by Jan Gottsman, item editor. Editor's note, this story updates the story that is printed in the July 17th item to include an announcement July 16th that Mike Notaro was appointed interim assistant principal at Clinton Middle School for the 2026-2027 school year. Clinton. With changes in administration after the resignation of Clinton Middle School principal, Tyler Steffi, Clinton School Superintendent Stephen Meyer said they are looking to leverage their strengths to make the district stronger. At the July 13th school committee meeting, Meyer outlined the changes already announced, with Clinton Elementary School principal Megan Frisch moving into the position of interim Clinton Middle School principal, and Kate Warren, the interim assistant Clinton Elementary School principal, moving with Frisch to be the interim assistant principal at the middle school. Meyer said Frisch and Warren will make a strong team in the building as they plan the transition to the new school in the fall of 2027, and grade 4 moving from the elementary school to the middle school. Alyssa Permarini, previous assistant principal at Clinton Elementary School before leaving to work for the State Department of Education, had been rehired to be the assistant middle school principal, but will move to the elementary school and work with current elementary school assistant principal Courtney Knoll as interim co-principals. They work really well together, and they step into their first principal roles together, Meyer said. Looking to the future, Meyer said the new middle school will use a split schedule, with grade 4 to 6 in their own universe and grades 7 and 8 on the high school schedule to help with busing and electives. With some administrative and teacher salary savings, with some positions changing, Meyer got support to hire a second interim assistant principal for Clinton Middle School in anticipation of the new structure, announcing on Thursday, July 16th, that Mike Natura would fill that role. It will round out the team and be poised for how the new building will be run, Meyer said. In a press release, Meyer wrote, "The transition to the new school will be a major reconfiguration for the entire district and will require establishing protocols and procedures for all aspects of the school day. The purpose of adding this position now, rather than wait until the fall of 2027, is to proactively support the moving and planning process in order to ensure a smooth transition." Natura has been an 8th grade English teacher and class advisor for many years and served 3 years as the dean of students before the position was eliminated from the budget. "We've always trusted you to do just that in running the district in the best way possible," Chair Matt Barrickas told Meyer in supporting him. Member Bill Connolly seconded that spirit. In addition, with the savings, they will be able to call back a teacher whose position was eliminated this year. Orioles fly to top of Boylston, West Boylston, Berlin, AAA Little League by Bill Marsh, Boylston. The top seed Orioles captured the Boylston, West Boylston, Berlin Little League AAA Championship, downing the Rockies, the 2 seed, in the best of 3 playoff series, 2-1. After the 2 teams split the first 2 games, the Orioles took a 5-1 decision from the Rockies in the title tilt. In that game, Brady Granger pitched 3 innings for the Orioles, allowing just 1 unearned run, while striking out 8 batters. Charlie Connor also pitched 3 innings and fanned 7. "Brady and Charlie are our 1-2 pitchers, and they are tough to beat," manager Jim Cazzo said. Will Croft and Bennett Granger both had a couple of big hits in the game. "We scored 2 runs early in the 3rd inning, and then 2 runs in the 5th to put the game away," he said. In the first game of the series, the Orioles took a 7-6 decision from the Rockies in an exciting walk-off victory. With the game knotted at 6-all, Wyatt Drouin ripped an RBI single in the bottom of the 7th inning to win the game. The big sticks for the Orioles in the game were T.J. Kaza, who had a 2-RBI double, while Granger and Croft both had a pair of doubles. "Brady Granger pitched really well in that game for us," Kaza said. "It was a real team effort with every kid hitting in that game. It was a team win, and you have to win the first game to put pressure on the other team," he said. Rockies manager Tony Scola was pleased with his team's effort in the first game and throughout the playoffs. "It was a back-and-forth battle in that first game," Tony Scola said. "We were down early and then tied up. It was a great game and could have gone either way." The second game was a 5-2 victory by the Rockies, with Ezekiel Woolliff and Alex Osterberg both turning in strong outings on the mound. Jimmy Monahan had 2 RBIs, and Tony Greig had a big double in the game, Scola said. "The Rockies pitched great and fielded great and shut us down the whole way," Jim Cazzo said. The other teams in the league were the Marlins, Diamondbacks, and Blue Jays. "We had 5 solid teams this year, and the league has seen a lot of growth in the last couple of years," Jim Cazzo said. "It's a credit to the board and our president, James Lindberg, and Jay Vitko. They've done a great job in running the league and making improvements to the field, he said. The excitement around the league has really grown the last couple of years. Three players from the Boylston, West Boylston, Berlin Little League, T.J. Kaza, Beckett Forbes, and Will Debedian, were given a recent first-class visit to the Orioles Park at Camden Yards Ballpark to see the Major League Baseball Baltimore Orioles in action. My wife's uncle has a connection to the Orioles, so I took three of the boys down to Camden Yards, Jim Kaza said. We were able to get on the field, and we met a bunch of the players, and we sat in a luxury box. It was really special, he added. I took a player from the Orioles, the Rockies, and Blue Jays to the game. Clinton residents volunteer for Pan Mass Challenge. On August 1st and 2nd, the Pan Mass Challenge, PMC, is hosting its annual bike-a-thon across Massachusetts, and local residents from Clinton will be among the more than 6,000 cyclists and 4,000 volunteers participating in the event to raise money for cancer research and care at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Riders from Clinton include Victoria Aldersley and John Donahue, according to the organization. Volunteers from Clinton include Shannon Barry, John Martin, and Jacqueline McCrillis. The PMC, which raises more money for charity than any other single athletic fundraiser in the world, is aiming to raise more than ever this year, with a fundraising goal of $79 million. This year's PMC comes at an especially critical time, with federal research support shrinking, grant approval rates reaching historic lows, and cancer cases continuing to rise. For the 20th consecutive year, 100% of every rider raised dollar will go directly to Dana-Farber, one of the nation's top three hospitals for cancer research and care. The theme for this year's PMC, which is Now More Than Ever, underscores the paramount importance of every single dollar raised in fueling the search for a cure, said Billy Starr, founder and chairman of the PMC. We are endlessly grateful to every rider, volunteer, donor, and sponsor who makes the PMC possible because of their training miles, long hours of volunteering, generous support, and unwavering commitment. We are moving ever closer to a world without cancer. Since its inception in 1980, the PMC has raised $1.125 billion for Dana-Farber, making it the organization's largest single contributor and accounting for 67% of the annual revenue of the Jimmy Fund, Dana-Farber's community-driven fundraising arm. This unrestricted annual funding has empowered and accelerated advancements in cancer research, benefiting patients across the world. During each PMC weekend, thousands of cyclists and volunteers come together from across the world, hailing from 47 U.S. states and 12 countries with a shared purpose of raising as much money as possible for Dana-Farber. Cyclists ride routes ranging from 25 to 177 miles. Including among these participants is the PMC Living Proof community, riders and volunteers who were previously treated or are currently undergoing cancer treatment and serve as living proof of the progress made through raising funds for cancer research and treatment. People interested in getting involved can learn more and register at pmc.org. RFK announces grant transition. Lancaster. RFK Community Alliance, RFKCA, announced two significant milestones for its Center for Behavioral Health. A $50,000 gift from an anonymous donor through the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts, and the center's successful transition to a licensed clinic under the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, DPH. The center specializes in serving children, adolescents, and adults with complex mental health conditions, providing care for those who often face the greatest barriers to accessing consistent high-quality treatment. The $50,000 contribution directly supports RFKCA's Center for Behavioral Health, enabling clinicians to extend care well beyond the therapy session. With philanthropic support, therapists are able to provide wraparound case management, collaborating with family members, teachers, physicians, and psychiatrists to ensure that a client's full support network is engaged in their case. Clinicians also connect clients with basic needs resources such as SNAP and WIC, early intervention services, and enrichment opportunities like music classes or RFKCA's Therapeutic Horsemanship Program. The Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts has been a strong and caring partner to RFK Community Alliance for many years, and we are deeply grateful for their continued investment in our work, said Kathy Mills, President and CEO of RFK Community Alliance. This gift reflects their genuine commitment to ensuring that young people and families in our region have access to the care they need and deserve. It allows clinicians to go further, to walk alongside clients in ways that go well beyond the therapy session and that make all the difference, Mills added. RFK Community Alliance Center for Behavioral Health has long been a trusted resource for families across our region who are navigating some of life's most difficult challenges, said Steve Adams, President and CEO of the Community Foundation of North Central Massachusetts. We are proud to support their work through this gift, which reflects our belief that every young person deserves access to quality mental health care close to home. This investment, paired with RFKCA's new clinical licensure and expanding school partnerships, will mean shorter wait times and more comprehensive support for kids and families right when they need it most. New DPH licensure expands reach. Among the center's most significant recent developments is its newly obtained license as a clinic through the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. This designation meaningfully expands the center's capacity, where RFKCA was previously limited to hiring full licensed clinicians, a population in high demand and short supply. The center can now recruit master's-level clinicians under the supervisory oversight of licensed therapists. The result is shorter wait times for clients. Beyond expanding RFKCA's own capacity, this licensure also positions the center as a training ground for the next generation of behavioral health clinicians in the region. Alongside expanded staffing capacity, the center has deepened its commitment to school-based services, which bring therapy directly to students and removes scheduling and transportation barriers for families. RFKCA continues its established partnerships with Clinton Public Schools and the Neshoba Regional School District, and it's expanding to select Hudson and Ashburnham schools this fall. Ashton and Seltzer honored as Commonwealth heroines. Two local women were honored as Commonwealth heroines during a ceremony in June. The 2026 class includes Jill Ashton of Clinton, nominated by State Rep Megan Kilcoyne, and Victoria Seltzer of Sterling, nominated by State Rep Mike Kushmerick. According to the website, the Commonwealth Heroine Award is given to women of the state who use their time, talent, spirit, and enthusiasm to enrich the lives of others in their communities. Each year, the commission partners with state legislators to identify women who make outstanding contributions to their organizations and communities. Each legislature is encouraged to submit one woman from their constituency as a means of recognizing their invaluable efforts. Ashton was nominated for her commitment to advancing the rights, opportunities, and well-being of women across the state and beyond, with over a decade of service with the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women. Ashton worked to elevate critical issues impacting women and families, helping to shape policy conversations at both the state and national levels. Currently, Ashton continues her advocacy through her work with the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers. Seltzer is an epidemiologist with the City of Fitchburg Health Department and the Montechusett Public Health Network. Her public health journey began during the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic as she was completing her undergraduate degree in microbiology at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She joined the public health workforce in April of 2020 as a contact tracer for the Community Tracing Collaborative, a joint project between the Mass Department of Public Health and the global health nonprofit Partners in Health. She later transferred the specialized unit with the CDC, known as the Epidemic Intelligence Unit, as an outbreak specialist. Following the closure of the CDC in 2021, she transitioned to her current role as a local health epidemiologist, which includes identifying gaps in health care access in her communities, and worked to establish a free clinic, now known as the North Central Free Medical Program. The 2026 Commonwealth Heroines class honored 147 women from across the state, the largest class in the program's history. Stella and Milo's Chips Taps Historic Techniques by Ken Cleveland, West Boylston. Jason Bakanowski started his potato chip journey during COVID, leading him to beef tallow used in Stella and Milo's chips, which he makes in West Boylston. I began educating myself on seed oils such as canola and other vegetable oils that are industrial processed, he said. I learned that these oils are often exposed to very high temperatures that can lead to oxidation and involve chemical extraction methods and refining processes such as bleaching and deodorizing. After researching the topic further, I decided to cut back on traditional store-bought chips and started making my own at home using beef tallow instead. Then it was on to making a better potato chip. What began as a personal experiment quickly turned into a project to make a better chip. After a lot of trial and error, refining the recipe, cooking process, and flavor profile, we eventually created a product we felt was truly unique, Bakanowski said. The lifelong Northborough resident opened a manufacturing facility in West Boylston in October of 2025 and began commercial sales in November of 2025. Since then, we've been focusing on growing Stella and Milo's direct-to-consumer presence and as a locally owned Massachusetts snack brand. The woof behind the brand comes from our dogs. Our dogs, Stella, love chips and pretty much all food. Anytime she heard a bag open, she would immediately come trotting over, hoping we would share. After she passed away, I wanted to honor her memory and her personality by naming the brand after her. Later, my girlfriend, co-owner Carolina Fontura, and I adopted another dog named Milo, which completed the name Stella and Milo's, Bakanowski said. I grew up enjoying kettle-cooked chips like Cape Cod chips, so that style definitely inspired what we wanted to create. However, almost all chips today are made with seed oils. Our goal was to recreate that classic kettle-cooked texture and flavor using 100% grass-fed beef tallow instead. Historically, beef tallow was actually a common frying fat for chips and other foods before large-scale manufacturers shifted towards seed oils, largely because they were far less expensive and easier to mass-produce. We wanted to bring back that more traditional approach while focusing on simple ingredients and bold flavor. Getting to the final recipe took a tremendous amount of experimentation and trial and error. We spent a long time refining everything from the potato slicing and frying process to the texture, seasoning, and consistency of the final product. Since beef tallow behaves differently than conventional seed oils, there was a significant learning curve in developing a chip that delivered the crunch and flavor profile we were aiming for. Scaling production for commercial sales was another challenge entirely. Our process is still very hands-on and labor-intensive, which required us to develop some creative methods to consistently achieve the quality and texture we wanted without relying on large, highly automated manufacturing lines. A lot of the journey involves continuous testing, adapting, and improving the process until we felt the product was truly ready for customers, Bakanowski said. Production involved getting a Board of Health-approved facility and certifications, as well as meeting FDA facility registration requirements. In addition, ingredient sourcing and product claims also have to be vetted. For example, claims such as 100% grass-fed beef tallow required working with suppliers that can provide appropriate documentation and verification standards for their ingredients. Overall, the process required a significant amount of preparation and coordination to make sure the facility, suppliers, and products met both local and federal food safety standards. Though he avoids saying they are healthy, Bakanowski said, "We believe they are definitely a better-for-you alternative compared to many conventional snack chips on the market. Many large-scale snack foods are designed primarily for low-cost and mass production, often using heavily processed oils and long ingredient lists that sometimes read like a chemistry experiment. Our approach is different. We focus on simple, all-natural ingredients, traditional cooking methods, and avoid artificial additives, Bukanowski said. That said, they are still potato chips, and moderation is important. We're not suggesting people should eat multiple bags every day just because the ingredients are simpler and tallow has more natural occurring benefits. Like most snacks, they still contain calories, and we think consumers should make informed choices about the foods they eat. After nearly a year making the chips at home and sharing them with friends and family, they moved forward with the business, opening the West Boylston production facility in October of 2025, which allowed us to begin commercial manufacturing and sales shortly afterward, he said. Preparing for market took more work and time. We sourced a packaging partner capable of producing a higher-end bag that matched the quality of the product inside, he said. We spent significant time carefully selecting our ingredients and suppliers. That included choosing a high-quality salt such as Baja Gold and working with potato suppliers we trust. We also required that our potatoes be non-GMO and grown without glyphosate use as part of our commitment to ingredient standards and transparency, Bukanowski said. We sell through a combination of direct-to-consumer and retail chains. That includes our own direct sales as well as partnerships with independent retailers, such as Stone's Throw Market in West Boylston, he said. We've also recently expanded into wholesale, which has opened the door to broader retail distribution. Today, you can find our chips at Shaw's, Star Market, and Home Goods. Looking ahead, we're focused on continuing to grow our wholesale footprint and expanding into additional retail partners over the coming year. Bukanowski said they plan to expand the product line. This summer, we plan to introduce smaller 2-ounce personal size bags, which make it easier for on-the-go snacking and sampling the product. We're also developing a barbecue flavor, which will be our first major flavor extension. As we grow, we're focused on adding varieties that stay true to our ingredient standards. We will only use organic seasoning, and the core identity of the brand will, while offering more options for consumers, he said. Historically, many chips were made using traditional cooking fats before the widespread shift towards seed oils, which are significantly less expensive and easier to produce at scale. Our approach is rooted in going back to a more traditional cooking fat while focusing on ingredient quality and transparency. It might seem like a splurge because our ingredient standards and the way our chips are produced using a more hands-on process rather than large-scale industrial lines, our product does cost more to make, Bukanowski said. Grass-fed tallow in particular is significantly more expensive than conventional seed oils, but we believe it is a worthwhile trade-off for the quality and integrity of the final product. Still time to catch music this summer. Music will give rhythm to the region as several summer concert series are held. Here's a listing of those received by the item. Berlin, 19 Carter Community Center has summer concerts set for Saturdays through August 15th, excluding July 4th, at the facility. Tickets are available now at 19carter.org. $175 for the summer pass. Individual tickets are $25 in advance or $30 at the door, $5 for students and free for children. 19 Carter will partner with local breweries and wineries at select concerts. July 25th, Nolan Slate Sextet. August 1st, Mark Russell and Friends. August 8th, Rio Flow Trio. And August 15th, Lori Diamond and Fred Apatelli with Analessi. For information, visit 19carter.org or email info@19carter.org. Bolton, Parks and Recreation and will be hosting 4 concerts on the Town Common from 6 to 8 p.m. on the following dates. July 17th, Brandy. August 21st, California Dreamers. September 18th, Pub Kings. And October 17th, Disco Lemonade. Weather cancellation notices will be announced on the Bolton Parks and Rec social media. For information, visit boltonma.myrec.com. Clinton. Concerts are held every Tuesday in Central Park, with rain date of Wednesday. Vendors expected include The Taco Dude, Sterling Street Brewery, The Fountain, Wheat and Water, and Fran Flynn. The host is Clinton Parks and Recreation. July 21st, Lacquerhead. July 28th, Rampage Trio. August 4th, Brookfield Rhythm. August 11th, Crossroad Band. August 18th, 01510 Band. August 25th, The Rusty Buckets Band. And September 1st, Mike Mazzalo rescheduled to this date due to rain. Lancaster. Thayer Memorial Library's annual concert series is set for Thursdays, July 16th, 23rd, and 30th at 6:30 p.m. July 16th and 30th is in the Reference Room. July 23rd is on the Town Green. The July 23rd show is Hit the Bus Band, and the July 30th is the Blue Collar Ramblers. Sterling. Sterling Recreation hosts concerts every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., June through August, in Memorial Park, behind the fire station. July 22nd, Rusty Buckets. July 29th, Illusions. August 5th, Rampage Trio. August 12th, Rhythm. August 19th, P.T. Pickers. August 26th, Rose Gold Glasses. West Boylston. All concerts are on Sundays except August 15th, which is Saturday. July's concerts are 6 to 8 p.m., and August's are 5 to 7 p.m., and are held at the Bandstand Common. July 19th, Reminiscence. July 26th, DeLoreans, Their Farewell Concert. August 2nd, Rhythm. August 9th, Cheek to Cheek. Saturday, August 15th, Southern Drive, featuring Michael David. And August 23rd, Illusions. If you have a town summer concert series in the item area and you don't see it listed, email information to news@clintonitem.com. Pumpernickel Puppets bring Peter Rabbit to life in Clinton. The Bigelow Free Public Library in Clinton will host Pumpernickel Puppets on Friday, July 31st at 2 p.m. for a performance of Peter Rabbit. This performance of Beatrice Potter's classic tale of a rabbit who can't resist the green goodies in Mrs. McGregor's garden is appropriate for ages 3 and older with their caregivers and families. For over 40 years, the Pumpernickel Puppets have captivated audiences of all ages with humorous and colorful adaptations of classic folk and fairy tales. John McDonough and his puppets present over 250 shows a year at schools, libraries, and private parties throughout the New England area. Register to secure your seat. The Bigelow Library is open Tuesday to Thursday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Friday, 9 to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 to 5 p.m. For more information and to register, visit bigelowlibrary.org or call 978-365-4160. Cornhole Tournament for Foundation is on August 29th, Boylston. The 6th annual Matthew John Phillips Cornhole Tournament is Saturday, August 29th, with a rain date of August 30th at Pop Warner Football Field, Route 70 and 140. Reserve your spot to benefit the Matthew John Phillips Scholarship Foundation. On the day of the tournament, registration opens at 11 a.m. Raffles are announced at 12:15 p.m. and bags fly at 12:30 p.m. Cost to register a team is $50. There's a food truck on site. The tournament is double elimination. Registration is due by August 22nd, but spots fill early. Also, create a player profile by downloading the free Scoreholio app. Every player needs a profile for tournament day. Corrected fall election ballot taking shape. Editor's note. Ming Zhang is challenging Senator John Cronin on the November ballot, looking to represent the Worcester and Middlesex Senate District. Now the town elections are mostly done, voters look forward to the fall elections for state and federal offices. The primary is set for September 1st, while the main election is November 3rd. The state mandates polls be opened from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The only municipal election planned for the fall is the Berlin-Boylston Regional School Committee, with the November election specified in the regional agreement. Many offices are not contested, either in the primary or the November election. Senate and House. There are no state Senate primaries in the item area. Neither 1st Worcester District State Senator Robin Kennedy of Worcester nor Worcester Middlesex District State Senator John Cronin of Fitchburg have opponents in the primary. Cronin had a challenger, Ming Zhang, on the November election. Kennedy represents Berlin, Bolton, Boylston and West Boylston in the Item area. Cronin represents Clinton and Lancaster in the Item area. Incumbent Worcester and Hampshire District State Senator Peter Durant of Spencer has no primary challenger on the Republican side. Democrat Shannon Thibault of West Brookfield will face Durant in the November election. The Worcester and Hampshire District includes Sterling. In the House of Representatives, incumbents James O'Day of West Boylston is facing a primary challenge from Babu Raj Rajeshkumar of West Boylston. There's no Republican challenger. West Boylston is the only Item area town in the district. 12th Worcester District Rep. Megan Kilcoyne of Clinton has no challenger in the primary and faces Republican Lisa Mayer of Berlin in the November election. The district represents Berlin, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, and Sterling in the Item area. 3rd Middlesex District Representative Kate Hogan of Stowe, who represents Bolton, has no challenger in either the primary or the November election. U.S. House and Senate. For the U.S. Representatives, 2nd District Rep. James McGovern of Worcester is running unopposed in both the primary and November election, while 3rd District Rep. Lori Trahan of Westford is unopposed in the Democratic primary and will face Republican Gary Grossi of Acton in the November 3rd election. Kevin Aides, unenrolled, is also running, according to Ballotpedia. Trahan currently represents Berlin, Bolton, Clinton, and Lancaster in the Item area, while McGovern represents Boylston, Sterling, and West Boylston. For U.S. Senate, Ed Markey of Malden is facing a Democratic challenge from Seth Moulton of Salem, while Republican John Deaton of Bolton will face the winner November 3rd. There are some other party candidates on the ballot. Philip DeVincentis, American Independent Party, Joseph Tachi, Party of Socialism and Liberation, Shiva Adora, Independent, and Morgan DeWicke, Independent. Berlin-Boylston School Committee. Nomination papers to run for the Berlin-Boylston Regional School Committee are now available. Elections for this board occur during the November elections. There will be one candidate elected to a four-year term from Berlin and two for four-year terms from Boylston. Nomination papers are available for pickup at the school district central office on Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., or pick them up from your town's clerk. To run for a seat, you must be a resident of either Berlin or Boylston and registered to vote in the community in which you live. You must collect 50 signatures. They can be a combination of from Berlin and Boylston, as long as they total at least 50. You must have separate nomination papers for Berlin signatures and Boylston signatures. Nomination papers must be submitted no later than Tuesday, July 21st at 5 p.m. to the town clerk in your town to get your nomination papers signatures certified. After nomination papers are certified by the town clerks no later than August 11th, you must pick them up from the clerk and bring them to District Clerk Jennifer Fortune at the Berlin-Boylston Regional School District Central Office at 215 Main Street in Boylston, no later than Tuesday, August 18th at 4 p.m. Statewide office. Governor Maura Healey of Arlington is unopposed in the Democratic primary, while Republicans Michael Minogue of Hamilton and Brian Shortsleeve of Barnstable will face off in the September 1st primary for a chance to challenge her in the general election. Lieutenant Governor Kimberly Driscoll of Salem is unopposed in the Democratic Party. Republican Sean Oliver of New Bedford will run unopposed in the primary for a chance to challenge Driscoll in November. Republican Ann Martin was disqualified from the ballot. In a state ballot law commission ruling June 26th, though Ballotpedia lists Martin as a write-in. Attorney General Andrea Campbell of Dartmouth, a Democrat, has no challenger in the primary. Republican Michael Walsh of Linfield was also disqualified from the ballot in a ruling on June 26th and will not appear on the November 3rd ballot. And Treasurer Deborah Goldberg of Brookline has no Democratic challenger in the primary, but will face Elizabeth Dione of Belmont, a Republican, in the November election. Secretary of State William Galvin of Brookline and Auditor Diana Dzigolia of Methuen are running unopposed. Non-party candidates running for federal or statewide office have until July 28th at 5 p.m. to file papers. Reflections from the editor, reclusive feline overlord, does things his way. Kicker, reflections. Whenever I meet people in the community, the question is the same. How's your kitty? Bandit is a bit of a local celebrity after appearing in this space so many times and for so long. So how is the kitty? Bandit still rules the roost in our household, but he has become more of a benevolent monarch in the last few months. Guess when you become a true senior, you are allowed to more quiet naps than zoomies. And his nap space of choice has become the master bedroom floor, close to his daddy's side of the bed. Even on the hottest days when the other rooms have air conditioners cooling the air, he has preferred the comfort of the fluffy throw rug or cloth bag he's chosen to sleep on. He comes to visit us in the living room between naps, usually to visit his water fountain, bubbling away near the couch, or to take jump up next to his daddy to get a comfortable belly rub. He even occasionally stretches out so his mommy can lightly stroke his head and the side of his jowls, until the siren song of the bedroom calls him back. Every once in a while, knowing we will make frequent visits to check on his well-being, you know, make sure he is still breathing, he finds a new quiet place to nap, and his worried mom and dad have to search high and low, finding him tucked behind a folded blanket on the hop check or obliviously curled under the side table. We know that our furry friends do not get to stay with us forever. His sister Callie had way too short a time with us, but Bandit has kept us protected and loved for 14 years. He rules over the house, content to stay in its safety until the yearly visit to the VET forces him into the evil carrier for a car trip. Funny how it takes us 15 minutes to get him into the carrier at the home, but he rushes into it in 15 nanoseconds when his appointment is over, and he knows he can return to the dreaded car for a too long drive home. Confession, we always feel bad and allow him to ride home in the safety of his mommy's arms, checking out the traffic through the window as the world rushes by. Before I was a pet owner, I could not imagine the panic of not being able to find that furball, calling out in panic, and then wondering how he could sleep through our frantic searches for the newest hiding place. We speculate how he could have escaped the house, knowing full well we could keep the door wide open for hours and he would never cross the threshold. Then the relief of finding him and oblivious to our panic. And we fear the day when we wonder where our cuddly bunny is, only to remember he has joined his sister and is doing zoomies in heaven. Till then, we will put up with his old man eccentricities. Jan Gottsman is the editor of The Item. She can be reached at news@clintonitem.com. Letter to the editor. Celebrating brings joy to new retiree. Kicker, letter to the editor. To all my friends at the Clinton Historical Society, thank you for making June 13th, 2026, a day I will remember with joy for the rest of my life. 40 years of time spent with friends were magically celebrated for me in all of the gifts and good wishes I received on Saturday. Thank you all for the thought you each gave to make it a wonderful day. Thank you for the citation from the Massachusetts House of Representatives and State Rep. Megan Kilcoyne. I've shown it to everyone here at Corcoran House. I never thought I would receive such an honor. Thank you for the Certificate of Appreciation and for making me a lifetime honorary board member. I truly enjoyed the work I did in my years on the board. It was so interesting to touch all the artifacts I handled and to hear the stories they represented during the 20-plus years I served as curator. Thank you for the engraved vase you gave me. It will be placed safely on a protected shelf in my room. The lunch was great. The cake was a thing of beauty and delicious. Thank you, Robin. The flowers were so beautiful, and they smell so lovely. Terry, thank you for the basket of cards. All 42 of them from various members and friends were so thoughtful. Carol, Jean D., Ellen, Joanne, Jean, I, Terry, Bob, Tom, Laura, and Lisa, thank you for years of help and friendship. And Chris, Michael, and Nick, I hope you have years of enjoyment like I did as board members. Thank you for joining us. I can't say thank you enough for all the planning and the work that went into making my retirement so wonderful. You are not just friends, you are family. Elaine Patterson Clinton. North Central Chamber launches Latino Business Council. Fitchburg, the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce, officially launched LITER, the Chamber's new Latino Business Council, at a kickoff event held on Tuesday, July 8th. LITER, which stands for Latino Initiative for Development of Entrepreneurship and Resources, is designed to connect Latino entrepreneurs and business leaders across the region to the networks, capital, education, and opportunities they need to grow their business and strengthen the regional economy. LITER will operate alongside established councils, including the Manufacturing Council, HR Council, Women's Leadership Connection, and Future Leaders Group. Members who join through LITER gain access to the full breadth of the Chamber's network of 650-plus businesses, 27 communities, and more than five decades of regional relationships, along with a community within it that reflects the Latino business experience. The name was chosen deliberately. In Spanish, LITER means leader, pronounced exactly like the English word. The initiative is designed to do precisely that, develop leaders, business leaders, community leaders, and the next generation of voices shaping the economic future of North Central Mass. The initiative comes at a moment of significant momentum for Latino entrepreneurship. Latinos represent more than 30% of the population in Fitchburg and approximately 18% in Leominster, well above the statewide average of 12.6%. Latino entrepreneurs are also starting businesses at three times the rate of the general population. Nationally, Latino-owned businesses grew 44% between 2018 and 2023, even as the number of white-owned businesses slightly declined. Despite that growth, Latino-owned businesses continue to face significant and persistent gaps in access to capital and networks, barriers that LITER is designed to help address. The stakes extend beyond the Latino business community. Latino entrepreneurs in this region are potential customers, suppliers, vendors, and workforce partners for every chamber member. Closing the gaps in access to capital and networks is not just an equity issue. It is an economic growth issue for the entire region. The Latino business community is not new to us, and we are not new to them, said Roy Nascimento, President and CEO of the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. LITER is about formalizing and deepening that relationship, creating a dedicated home within the chamber where Latino entrepreneurs can connect, grow, and lead. The talent and drive are already here. LITER gives it a place to go. Maribel Cruz, chair of the LITER Steering Committee and director of Housing and Development for the City of Fitchburg, helped guide the formation of the council. Cruz worked for years with the Chamber's North Central Massachusetts Development Corporation. LITER represents an important step toward greater Latino representation within our business community. The Chamber's support, leadership, and network create opportunities for the Latino community to become more connected and engaged in all that the Chamber offers while helping Latino entrepreneurs and businesses grow and thrive, Cruz said. LITER's programming will focus on the practical needs of Latino business owners at every stage of growth, including networking events, workshops on financial literacy, and access to capital, and professional development on topics such as government, procurement, and business growth strategies. The initiative is also designed to serve as a welcoming front door to the Chamber for Latino entrepreneurs who may not yet be members. The July 8th kickoff drew Latino business owners and professionals, chamber members, community and civic leaders, and elected officials to the chamber offices in Fitchburg for the official launch, announcement, and a networking reception. Latino business owners, businesses looking to connect with Latino business community, and others interested in LITER are encouraged to visit northcentralmass.com, where a dedicated LITER webpage with programming details, membership information, and upcoming events will be available as the Council continues to build out its programming. Icon Museum offering free Family Thursdays, Clinton. The Icon Museum and Study Center is hosting free Family Thursdays in July, with dates continuing July 23rd and July 30th. The staff is hosting drop-in activities and tours geared towards creative and inquisitive visitors of all ages. Visitors are also invited to join in on guided tours through the day offered by museum staff and volunteers. Guests will get to explore the materials used to create the vibrant colors found in the icons. Museum staff will guide visitors as they experiment with creating paints, using prepared pigments, and embellishing their artwork with silver and gold colored foil. Learn about where these materials are found and what the different colors signify in the icon tradition. They will also learn about the beautiful lettering found in illuminated manuscripts and some icons. Using templates and examples on hand, explore basic lettering styles and create illuminated letters. Participants will be encouraged to be creative and make an illuminated letter that represents their unique personality. The Icon Museum and Study Center is located at 203 Union Street, across from Clinton Central Park. For more information about current exhibits and admission on other days, visit iconmuseum.org. Bolton Church welcomes community to Story Slam by Danielle Ray. A church in town has two upcoming events that the community is invited to that are inspired by a global organization dedicated to storytelling. First Parish of Bolton at 673 Main Street is hosting a Story Slam this month and next month, July 16th at 4 p.m. and another one August 22nd, and everyone is welcome to join in to share or just listen and enjoy. Reverend Virginia Ginger Bove, the senior minister of the Ecumenical Congregation Certified, as open and affirming, said that they have all ages participate over the past years. The event is intergenerational, from age 19 to 90. She recently said, "It's an intimate setting in a circle, no stage, and all are supportive of one another, no pressure." Bove has been in her position at First Parish of Bolton since October of 2023 and has lived in Westford for 14 years. She said that while she has not shared any personal stories herself, preferring to listen, she does a lot of sharing in her sermons and column in the church's weekly e-newsletter. She added that she had heard of the MAW, the New York City-based nonprofit that offers a weekly podcast, and in 2009 launched a national public radio show, the Moth Radio Hour, which won a 2010 Peabody Award. In addition, her 19-year-old son writes gorgeous fantasy stories, which gave Bove the idea to host story slams at the church to give people the opportunity to share their work. Clinton looks to examine school technology. Clinton. Technology is moving so quickly, especially in education. When Superintendent Stephen Myers joined the district, they were scrambling to catch up with technology and then leveraged that technology through the pandemic. Now, Myers said the administrative team is reading a book, The Digital Delusion, by Dr. Jared Cooney Horvath, which is looking at the cost of relying too much on technology and how to balance the potential pluses and minuses. Before technology, some tasks were more of a struggle, but that also led students to work through the problems in a way that might have helped with retention and understanding. We will try to take the good things about digital technology, but not lose the struggle in tangibly working through problems, Meyer said. We intend to be intentional with the use of technology, looking at what you can do with technology that you could not before. That includes the distractions of cell phones, which also need to be addressed as the state works on school cell phone bans. Another aspect is artificial intelligence and making sure students can do the skills themselves before allowing IA to assist the process. If you've written a letter over and over, you can use AI to help write it and know what you need to look for as you go over it. If you have never written a letter, AI can be dangerous. You don't have the knowledge to verify if the AI information is right, Meyer said. At the next meeting on August 10th, the administrative team will have a recommendation on a cell phone bylaw change for Clinton High School in anticipation of the state regulations coming. That would allow for phone calls without other uses of the phone, like social media. Currently, there's a bell-to-bell ban at the elementary school and middle schools, but the high school ban is only during class, not during passive time and lunch. One component to the law will be a bell-to-bell ban that requires locking down the devices. Meyer said, adding the system they are looking at would allow phone calls for emergencies. The technology would only cost about $3,000, he added. Nutting's time extended in Berlin by Jan Godsmann. The select board voted to extend the existing interim town administrator's contract during the July 13th meeting. This allows the town administrator to continue while the town continues its search for a new administrator after the board's choice, Alex Meggy, decided to take another job last week. Jeff Nutting will serve as interim until a new person comes in, working approximately 2 days a week, but with hours as needed to support operations. Dee Green will be supporting day-to-day operations as the assistant town administrator, with Eric Strait as the executive assistant. Maggie was interviewed and chosen as the top Berlin candidate on June 13th, but, according to published reports, accepted the job of town manager in Chelmsford on July 6th, apparently telling the board he passed up another offer because Chelmsford was reportedly his dream job. Maggie was the Andover deputy town manager, chief of administration and finance from September 2025 to February, and was a finalist for the recent Clinton town administrator opening also. He was also offered a position in Hubbardston in May, but withdrew from that process. The other two finalists interviewed in Berlin were Evan Kenny, who has been the Midfield town administrator from March of 2025 to present, and James Kreidler, who was the Townsend town administrator from 2015 to 2023 and is currently working in the private sector. Former Berlin town administrator Kristen Rubin left to take a similar job in Upton. Nutting has been serving as the Berlin interim town administrator since her departure in March. Hillside Plan moves forward in Boylston by Ken Cleveland. Boylston. The Hillside Master Plan is getting closer to a finished document to guide use of the Hillside property, home to the town municipal offices and police department, as well as historical and recreational facilities. But it is not there yet. It is, however, headed to further discussion at the Select Board's July 27th meeting. The board discussed it on June 29th with Master Plan Committee member Nell Lazor, noting efforts such as the septic system for the Go House. The work could be done starting late in the summer, Town Administrator April Stewart told the board. Lazar said the committee was looking to raise somewhere in the neighborhood of $450,000 for this first small phase of work. But she noted, in order to apply for a lot of these funding sources, we need plans. We need to be able to show to these funders that we have plans. We know what we're doing. Ask for specific parts of what we're trying to do. Seeking funds from the Community Preservation Act needs to have things in the works by November. Those funds must be approved by town meeting. The Fuller Foundation, as you know, is very involved and is willing to fund the first planning cost with the designer, Lazar said. The memorandum of understanding on Hillside is still being reviewed by legal counsel. Trash options. After many discussions on trash options for the town's residents over the years, the town is seeking input. A survey is available through the town website. The town of Boylston is evaluating the potential implementation of a town-wide trash and recycling program with Casella Waste Systems, it stated. The survey is designed for information purposes to help the town assess community interests and current service usage. The survey will be open for comment through July 31st. Only one response per household will be counted. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Ellen. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have your best day ever.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.